You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates. You're listening to Absolute Empowerment with Coach Jeff Connors on The Sports Objective. Join Coach C, a USA Strength and Conditioning Hall of Famer, every Monday night to see in a variety of guests, including former players, former and current coaches, pastors, and others will discuss relevant issues in coaching today's athlete, with the goal of equipping the athlete and those coaching them with the physical, mental, and spiritual armor necessary to live their best life. Here's Coach Connors.
Welcome to our 12th show. These shows are basically geared toward finding people who are highly accomplished with an even higher testimony of faith that helped them to become highly accomplished individuals. And today, we've got Emmanuel McDaniel and Junior Smith on the show. These two gentlemen were integral parts of the success of the program at East Carolina through the early 90s, and I had the privilege and honor to coach them. And so I just want to first say that I personally want to thank you guys for your contribution to the program, how hard you worked, how much you gave back to the program in relationship to leadership, and then the great accomplishments that you had beyond the program as well. So I have a ton of respect for you two guys, and I really appreciate you being on the show today. So welcome to the show.
Thanks, Coach. Thank you. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
As I said, you guys were both relentless workers and competitors. And we're going to talk a lot about you today because that's what this is about. It's about your story. But before you got to East Carolina, the question that I have is, I'd like for you to maybe tell me about the influences in your life that got you through high school and got you to the doorstep at East Carolina to play football at that level. And then the other thing is, was there anything significant you had to overcome to get to ECU where you had to basically look toward your faith? So I'll just let go ahead first, Junior.
All right. Well, hello, everybody. I'm Junior Smith, and I'm from Fayetteville, North Carolina. I guess the first question was, what did I have to what was the influence on me? And I would say that, I was in a battle coming through high school between, trying to fit into my environment, my culture, and also trying to be successful. And if it wasn't for the coaches that I had, like coaches and teachers that kept saying, hey, we see something in you, you got a bright future. You don't want to make these wrong choices. Because a lot of my friends, they were telling them the same things, but they made the wrong choices and they ended up in prison or just went down a road that they regret, whether it was drugs, just things that they weren't happy about. So I want to say, the coaches that I had, they really pushed me. They saw something in me. The biggest thing I had to overcome was my size. I played football all my life, but I just wasn't growing any taller. So that was one of the things that I had to overcome because I was the leading rusher in the state. I was the all-state player, those types of things. But when it came down to recruiting, a lot of the bigger schools ignored me. And it came down to Appalachian State, East Carolina, Minnesota, and some other schools. And through my faith, God kind of led me to choose East Carolina. And that was one of the best choices I made in my life because it allowed me to, one, be the all-time leading rusher at ECU. One, two, to be in the Hall of Fame. Three, to get into coaching. And also to the things that I learned, to be able to give that back to the players that I coached and to be able to have the honor to say, hey, I coached another player that made the Hall of Fame at East Carolina. That was a great thing. So that was kind of a little bit of my background. Hopefully I answered your question.
Absolutely. I appreciate that. And, I know that you thought you're I can see where – I guess your height would have been an issue with some of the bigger universities, but all I can tell you is I never saw anybody run that zone play better than you. And whether they couldn't find you or what, I know when you hit a crease and you started spinning, man, I mean, there was nowhere to stop Junior Smith. And I remember that Memphis game in 1991. I think we ran a 35 zone like seven times in a row or something like that. And they still couldn't stop you. So I don't think that kept you from becoming greatly successful. And we'll talk about your strength here in a little bit too. But Emac, let's hear a little bit about your background there.
Well, for me, I mean, it's kind of similar. I mean, I had good coaches, you know, kept me out of trouble. I had family members going on the wrong road, going to jail, or, you know, getting killed. My mom and dad was big in my life too. I mean, they pushed me and drove me. And me and Junior kind of got the same story. You know, I was undersized coming out of high school. You know, I got sick one year and went down to like, what, 142 pounds?
Yeah, we all remember that.
I mean, I never had real size, so I had to make up for it with speed and, you know, work ethic.
Right. Well, the thing about it was I like to pride myself in the fact that we were overachievers. And we didn't back down from anybody through that time period. And that's what East Carolina is pretty much known for. You know, and I'm glad to see them getting back on top again with regard to the way they're playing physical now, particularly on defense. And, of course, they've got some very good running backs as well. So, you know, good to see that. Of course, they got a big game. You know, this is pre-recorded, so we're on a Friday here, so the big game's tonight for them. You know, when coaches come in the program, you know, in my experience in East Carolina all the way through my coaching experience, I've been at a penthouse, outhouse, and everywhere in between. You know, when a new coach comes in, like Coach Houston, when Scotty Moe couldn't get it done, basically talked about changing the culture, and the coaches talk about this all the time. So I just want to go back to, 1991. What do you guys think was important about the culture then of our team that led us to 11 wins and a Peach Bowl victory and a number 9 ranking in the country? Whoever wants to go first.
I think it was just a brotherhood.
Right.
I mean, we all hung out together. You know, we pretty much did everything together. We pushed each other in practice. I mean, it was just a mindset. We were tired of being what East Carolina was before we got there.
Yeah.
You know, tired of being looked upon like the little brothers, so to speak.
Now, in 91, Emac, did you get much playing time that year?
No, I redshirted.
Okay, yeah, I couldn't remember. I do remember Junior, of course, got quite a bit of playing time as a freshman. But Junior, you know, give me your thoughts on that.
I just think that that we had a chip on our shoulder. I think we had a great coaches and good leadership. And like Emac said, I don't think we wanted to be known as the little brother anymore. You know, just the lack of respect in the state with the ACC right here and, you know, some other schools. But I think the biggest thing was, you know, we kind of like wrote a movie script, and that the theme of the script was believe. And, you know, I think that when it came down to crunch time, we had put the work in, and we just got a little bit more confident every game. And we had good leadership in Robert and Jeff and Luke and Dion, a lot of the other seniors, and Mark Washington, some other guys that, the work ethic was there. And then, you know, like I said, Coach C, you led us with, I think, the big thing with conditioning. You know, we said, hey, no one's going to out-condition us. I don't know if kids can train like we train back in the day to get in shape, but we were willing to do anything to make it happen. And, you know, we were held accountable.
Yeah, I don't think anybody ran like we ran, and that was big for me. And, you know, even bigger was the fact that the mentality of we work harder than anybody else. We're going to play harder than anybody else. We're going to be more physical. You come into Ficklin, you're going to get hit in the mouth. You know, we're going to play a very high level of football in relationship to physicality. And we're going to play for four quarters that way. So, you know, I was very proud of the way that that the team played during those years in relationship to those factors. And again, you know, I can't tell you how much I appreciated working with you guys. And, you know, now we're going to mention here after the 91 season, because we, you know, we spent a lot of time together for a period of time. What parts of the culture do you think was sustained after, you know, Bill Lewis and the majority of the staff left? Anyone?
I think after Coach Lewis left, Coach Logan kind of picked up where he left off. I mean, we, you know, we kept some coaches. You know, East Carolina was basically like stepping stone, you know, for coaches come there, get their big jump. But I mean, as from the conditioning standpoint, none of that ever changed. I don't think kids can run like we ran back then. I don't.
Well, I agree.
I mean, I just remember you telling us we'll never lose a game in the fourth quarter. I remember we got outscored in the fourth quarter one time, and that Sunday you killed us. But I mean, the culture in general with kids these days is about, it's all changed.
Yeah.
I mean, I look at us, we were like a different breed back then, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can go back and you can hear stories about people in other programs. Hey, they got off the plane, they lost the game somewhere, and they, you know, they conditioned as soon as they got off the plane, all kinds of stuff like that. You know, things like that just don't happen anymore. And, you know, I was old school, of course. I can go into, you know, what I experienced as an athlete through high school and college, and none of it was easy, that's for sure. You know, we had 3-a-days for 2 weeks when I was in college. And the third practice was nothing but running. You know, we ran, I don't know how many 40s every night. You know, it was crazy. But so, yeah, I think things have changed in relationship to that to some extent. But some of that has changed for the better because, you know, we experienced 20 deaths or so throughout the a couple decades there. And a lot of those deaths had occurred in conditioning. But again, you know, we didn't get out there and run 10 300s like the first day. I mean, it took us all summer to get to that point. Yeah. And basically you guys kicked it up to 10. So I was still okay with 6 or 8. But on that Tuesday, you know, that was a big day. Who do you think, looking at your teammates through that time period, who do you guys remember as, you know, other guys that you played with that were important in relationship to leadership and being a great example to the rest of the team? You know, who stands out in your mind, you know, there, and maybe people you've kept in touch with? I don't know, but who would you mention there?
I think we can answer that from two sides of the ball. I know that Emac and I came in together. And so when we came in, you know, I think the leaders at that time, you know, was obviously Robert Jones, who was a first round draft pick. He was a good leader. Jeff Blake, obviously, and another NFL player. You had Tom Scott, the late Tom Scott, you know, Michael Rhett, Daniels. I mean, I think they just had a good senior class, Chris Hall. You know, I don't want to leave anybody out, but I think between that and a combination of a good recruiting class, I think a lot of guys were hungry and just going to go out and display and prove. And I think when those guys left, you know, Crumpler and some of the other guys were good leaders, you know, that next season. And then it came down to our 91 class trying to fill in the gaps and got us back to the Liberty Bowl. So we had those 2 years where we were a little down with injuries, but we took what we learned from Jeff, Robert, those guys, which was my senior year. We were able to pass it on to Darren Hart, David Hart, Marcus Crandall, those guys, Emac. He was able to take it on the next year and take the team back to back-to-back Liberty Bowls. And then from there, we just kept going to see, just kept moving along.
So, Junior, your senior year, was at the first Liberty Bowl?
Yeah, that was the first Liberty Bowl.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Yeah, that was a tough game. But, you know, Illinois was pretty freaking good, man. I mean, they had some great players on that team. They really should have been in a bigger bowl, but they had quite a few guys that got drafted.
I had to agree with Junior. I think we just had some good leaders when we came in, and we kind of just – they taught us how to lead.
Yeah.
and we passed it on down from there.
Gotcha. So, you know, if you had to go back and relive your experience as an athlete at East Carolina, is there anything that you'd want to change in relationship to your experience?
You want to go ahead?
Personally, I would. Personally, I wouldn't want to change anything. I mean, I enjoyed the people I played with. I enjoyed the coaches I had. I enjoyed my time at East Carolina. Mm-hmm. When people tell you the best time of your life is in college, that's the best time of your life.
Well, I think that's a great testimony. I think that's a great answer. Junior, what about you?
For me, I think I wouldn't change anything. I'm very thankful for God's grace to be able to have a great college career and not be injured, and just to be able to participate in every game, you know, every year of my career in college. And then the teammates that I met, and then, you know, academics. You know, I wish I was I finished strong in academics, but I didn't have a good core, a good foundation before I got to ECU. I wish I'd have worked a little harder coming out of high school to have a good foundation. I probably would have taken advantage of like my summer school courses instead of just using that to work out. I wish I went ahead and tried to graduate early and get another degree and be more business minded at that time. Just because you need to be able to, you know, be successful on and off the field. So that would have been the one thing I would have changed, not wait 10 to 15 years to learn about business and stuff like that, which I'm doing now.
Is there any one game that you can think back of that you enjoyed more than anything else? I mean, obviously the Peach Bowl. But what games do you remember more than any other games that you really enjoyed?
For me, it was my freshman season because we were traveling. So we were going to like Syracuse, playing in the Dome, went to Illinois, went to Pittsburgh, just different places. So they haven't really been outside of North Carolina. You know, I've been outside of North Carolina, but not to the, you know, you always saw the stadiums and the fans on TV. So then that be a part of a college program, be able to get on the airplane, be in the same travel suits with your teammates and just kind of experience that whole thing. And then just, I remember really that freshman year, there's some of those games, it was just electric, you know.
Right.
And then the Peach Bowl, obviously winning that game and beating our in-state rivalry and everyone running on the field. I got some great memories. And then, you know, you have your senior year when you break the record and you get back to the Liberty Bowl and E.J. Gunthorpe's running around with the flag. And, you know, we had just won like kind of the conference coalition there. So it was, all those things were pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel the same way about that because I was just a young coach. And I was coming in from Bucknell and I was getting my principal certificate. I was thinking about going to be a superintendent of schools someday at the high school level. And then all of a sudden I had the ECU offer. And so, you know, those things were very special to me as well, particularly when we landed at the airport and all those people were there that we had to fight through that were celebrating. And that was a really special deal. Yeah. How about you, Mac?
I had to agree with the Syracuse game. I mean, that was, when we got back to that airport, that's one of the biggest memories I have. Having to escort back to the dorms. I mean, that was ridiculous. I didn't even see that in the NFL.
Right.
And I still think Dottie Ficklin was louder than any NFL stadium I ever played in.
It was loud, and we had 35,000 then. So it was definitely live, man, week in and week out that year and plenty of other times for sure. The person that I wanted to mention, the player I wanted to mention, that you guys, I'd like for you to say a few words about is Morris Foreman. You know, Morris Foreman was very special to me. And, you know, I had an opportunity. I was asked to speak at the funeral and so forth. But that hit me really hard. And you know, tell me a little bit about what you remember about Morris Foreman.
I just remember him putting in the work, being a great leader.
Yeah.
I mean, he came in, I think me and Mo Med came in. I came in with Junior, but when I actually hit the field, that he got there my sophomore year, redshirt sophomore, junior, true sophomore year.
Right.
I mean, when he came in, he just fit in. Just like everybody else, like he had a work ethic, just like everybody else, he pushed everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a good leader. I'll say that. We were, I guess all of us were the same age as far as the class of high school. And then I guess he went off another route and then came to ECU. But I just remember him being a highly recruited player and just being a skilled player where they wanted to use him as punt returner and just showed a good leadership to come in and play as a true freshman. And, you know, we kind of put him on offense, played on defense. I think he was probably one of the higher ranked recruits to sign with ECU in a long time, just to be a local kid and those types of things. He was just a great leader, you know.
Right.
That whole crew that he was with him, MC, the twins, they all came in together. Sean, they all came in together and they formed a good nucleus, and they did a nice job. But I definitely was a good player, good person, very quiet, good leader.
Yep.
What do you guys remember about your position coaches? You know, anything there that you want to mention?
Well, I think I had the best position coach ever, you know, Coach Barry. Because not only did he look out for me while I was playing, you know, was a good coach, good leader, good role model. But then he gave me a lot of opportunities, you know, after I finished playing. When I finished playing pro ball and I was cleaning windows and cleaning the stadiums, you know, trying to get back in school, finish my degree in grad school, you know, he gave me an opportunity to get in coaching. So, you know, I got great respect for him. He allowed me to go coach at Illinois State. You know, he took me to Army with him. And then he talked to Coach in Louisiana Monroe of giving me an opportunity as well. So I'm very grateful for my position coach.
I had some great coaches. I had a different defensive back coach every year, but
yeah,
I mean, I learned a little bit of everything from all of them. Coach Cassidy, Coach Pagano's, Coach Fleming. I mean, like Junior, Coach Fleming gave me an opportunity to get into coaching.
Right.
I moved to Akron, volunteered for a year, and next thing you know, I'm the corners coach up there. So I appreciate everything they did for us. Like you said, I think I had great coaches. I wouldn't change them for the world.
Absolutely. Those were some of the favorite people that I coached with, too. I mean, Pagano, I got to coach with him at UNC as well. And, of course, yeah, he went through some trying things with his health. But then, you know, when he and then, of course, became the head football coach with the Indianapolis Colts and then had to fight leukemia. And, you know, I think that Coach Fleming has had a good year. Rhode Island, of course, you know, Fleming last year offered me the job at Rhode Island. But you know, I'm too far into this retirement to move to Rhode Island somewhere. But I love Coach Fleming, man. He's a great, great guy. We had a lot of good times together. Same thing with Coach Pags. And of course, Coach Berry's has been very successful. I guess he became what the president of the national organization or whatever.
Yep, president of the Coaches Association. Yeah.
So, you know, guys became very successful throughout their careers and were a joy to be around. I want to talk a little bit more about faith and maybe faith through your collegiate career. You know, Coach Logan always used to say at the end of a lot of practices, you know, you're a fool if you don't have a spiritual life through your collegiate career. And then we had, I guess, Chuck Young was there then, who had, you know, was kind of like the team chaplain and inviting people to his house for that weekly meal and so forth. And so, you know, maybe just say a few things about the importance of a spiritual life through your collegiate career. I'll be honest with you. I didn't spend a whole lot of time in church and in a spiritual life through my collegiate career. I had a strong spiritual life and, growing up when I went to college, I kind of put it on time out, which I think a lot of people do. And, of course, looking back, I wish that I had had more of a spiritual life through that time. But what do y'all have to say about that in relationship to what advice you'd give people who play at the collegiate level and maybe could benefit more in their experience from having a strong spiritual commitment throughout their collegiate experience?
kind of like you. I wish I would have had a better spiritual life while I was in college. I mean, it actually gives you peace.
Right.
And when you're at peace, you become better at everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, I think I had a decent foundation. I don't think that my actions always followed up with what was in my heart. So if I could go back and do it again, I would definitely would have realized that that was the one thing that I was going to take from college and everything was my spiritual foundation all the way up to this point. So I wish I would have, like you said, built up. I wish I would have represented Christ a little bit better. I tried to do a good job, but I think I could have did a lot better, you know, and being a little bit more outspoken and as far as, because that's the one thing that, you know, the helmet, you know, you can't get back into the stadium when you want to. You're not able to talk to your teammates like you used to, but the one thing that I was able to take was that spiritual foundation. And I thank God for his grace of getting me through college and allowing me to be the first in my family to have a college degree and to be at play at the college level. So I wish I'd have represented him more. But, you know, I had a chance later on to push that to other people as well.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. Junior, will you talk a little bit about your coaching career? And first, you know, beyond college, your playing career, and then your coaching career. Can you give us a little bit more about that as far as your experience there?
Yeah, so once I left ECU, had a great career. However, the NFL teams, they didn't call my number. You know, I remember watching that draft, watching every round. You know, they never called my name. It was kind of disappointing, but you had to move on. So I thank God for that chapter in my life. So then I had to go to the next chapter where I went to the Canadian Football League. And so I was happy for the opportunity. I went to Shreveport, Louisiana, made an immediate impact, made the team out there. That was pretty exciting. But I learned then that, hey, football, every day I saw different guys coming in and out the locker room, you know. And so I saw, hey, man, I don't know if this is the way I want to live my life. You know, I like getting paid every Monday, you know, and that was different from college. You're getting a paycheck, and that was pretty cool. But then I said, hey, I got to take it to another level. So once I finished my playing career, came back to school, finished up my degree, got into graduate school. Before I could finish graduate school, I got a call to come go into coaching. So from there, I went to Illinois State, and that was my first coaching job. It was like a restricted earnings position where I didn't have to do the GA stuff. I could just do coaching and get paid limited money. So that was a great opportunity. Coached two NFL players there in Avion Kayson, Willie Watts. And then I had a chance to work with Edgerrin James's brother and his cousin was one of my running backs. So that was pretty cool to work with that family. But just then, I think the thing for me was I was still kind of in player mode. So I would be trying to do the drills with the players and trying to show what I could do. I was trying to develop them by saying, hey, I did this before. Trust me, you know, that type of thing. So that was kind of cool. And we went in two championships there. And we got the job at Army. We went to Army. And it was great, the type of kids you were have an opportunity to work with, but our program, I think our last year we didn't win a game. So it was kind of humbling, you know, but then to get back to East Carolina and help rebuild a program and play in that same conference and then win two championships. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. Emac, tell us a little bit about, which I would call an illustrious NFL career. I mean, and what you accomplished in relationship to the things that you did as a player and the time that you spent in the league is very, I'm not going to say it's amazing because I always believed in you and I really believed in your work ethic because I really don't know anybody who worked harder than you when you were in college. And, but you really accomplished some great things as a player. You know, talk about that.
It was a lot of work. I will say that for any kid coming out of college, it's not easy. You got to strap your boots up and work every day. Like Junior said, you see people coming in and out of that door every day. I remember the biggest advice I got one time was somebody told me, it was like, park your car over there so you can see it. And every time you get tired, look at that car. I'm like, I got to make that car payment.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was work, but I took some of the stuff I learned through college, and I think that's what got me through the NFL. I mean, it was rough at the beginning because I got released, you know, 3 or 4 times, went to different cities. I go to sleep in one city, wake up, next thing you know, I'm in another city.
Yeah.
So.
Well, tell us a little bit about it. There's a lot of people out there I don't think are familiar with your career. So tell us about the teams you played for and some of the accolades that you received.
I got drafted by the Panthers. I was there for like a year, year and a half. And I went to, Indianapolis. I went to Miami with Coach Lewis. He brought me down to Miami. And I left Miami. I went to New York, stayed there for 3 years. Ended up going to Super Bowl, NFC Championship, MVP. We lost Super Bowl that year, but it was a great season. Led the team in interceptions, second on the team in pass breakups, and left there. Actually, I went to Cleveland. People don't even know this. I went to Cleveland. Coach Pagano brought me up to Cleveland. And when I left Cleveland, I came back to Carolina and went to Arizona my last year. So it was a long run, a lot of moving. I think I probably moved about 20, 25 times between coaching and playing.
Gotcha.
And then, well,
it was a great, great career. And I really respect what you accomplished. And I think that I think we ought to recognize that a little bit more at East Carolina. And I'll talk a little bit about that here in a couple minutes. But, Junior, I just wanted to ask you, what Army is a really unique place. And so what did you take from Army in relationship to a disciplined culture?
Well, just the discipline that those guys had to have, they had to wake up every morning, get into formation and be within grooming regulations and just the leadership. And then they had to, like, the amount of hours they had to take for each class. Like, they had to take like 16 hours a semester. It was like something crazy that they had to do. And I remember that. And that between the sports, that, and they had to do the military at the same time. So they were responsible for a lot.
Well, one of the things that we always chart is mental errors. Do you think that those guys, because of their intelligence and discipline, had less mental errors in a football game?
No, I think once you put the helmet on and you got to think and you're tired, I think, they had a lot. They had some mental errors too, but they were smart. The work ethic was really good too.
Emac, I also wanted to ask you with regard to the NFL, a little bit about the culture of pro football, and if you saw things there that you felt were problematic. What would you say about that? Did you see anything in the culture of the NFL that you thought was problematic across the board?
Yeah, the biggest problem I think guys have is women. That's a huge problem. I mean, I've seen a lot of stuff. I won't call any names, but I've seen a lot of stuff and played with some people that, I didn't always agree with what they were doing. They may not agree with everything I did, but I mean, women, and I think right now the drug problem is huge in the NFL. Marijuana is, it used to be a problem. Now, you get in the program, you get tested at least once a week. They can test you up to, I think it's 13 times in a month.
Yeah.
So, the culture is just totally different than the college culture. I mean, you think about it, you playing with some guys that's been there 15, 20 years. And I mean, it's all about who you gravitate to.
Yeah.
I mean, I gravitated to some of the veterans, the Eric Davises, you know, Lamar Latham. I gravitated to them guys, and they kind of showed me the ropes.
Right. through your NFL career, who are a couple guys that you respected as leaders, good examples, hard workers, that type of thing?
I mean, Eric Davis, he taught me just about everything I know about playing that position. I mean, he took me on his wing, him and his wife, the godparents of my kids. He took me on his wing and just taught me the ropes. He was like, if I go down, you got to play. So I still want to win whether I'm in there or not. So he was a big leader. Strahan was huge leader. Jesse Armstead. And when I went to New York, they took me on. And Jesse, me and Jesse still talk every once in a while now.
Right.
And I still talk to Eric all, you know, occasionally. He's in California, so we're on different time limits. But I mean, those guys were huge in my career.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit more about ECU. I saw the schedule for next year. I think there's one team on there, Michigan, that's Power Five. We can go back, of course, through the 90s and talk about Power Five wins. And yeah, I was fortunate in my experience at ECU to experience 35 Power Five wins. And, you know, I'm very proud of that fact. My vision for ECU when I was there in the 90s was I thought we'd at some point be in a bigger conference and of course, I'm a little disappointed that we're not one of those teams like Cincinnati and Central Florida and Houston, of course, moving to kind of a bigger, better conference, I guess you could say, but it's certainly going to be challenging for them. But looking at the schedule next year, I feel like ECU should not have a problem, you know, winning 7 games minimum. You've also got a Gardner Webb team on the schedule, and you've got a weaker schedule overall, but anybody can beat you on any given day. We know that. Again, I want to go back and recognize you guys as far as, you know, what you accomplished in relationship to how many of those teams we beat during that time period. Now, how do you feel about this? Do you feel like it's obviously ECU's got a great stadium now. They're going to build an indoor facility. The facilities are improved. They found the money for that. Is it as exciting or favorable to go out and, hey, we're going to go win 7, 8, 9 games, have a chance to win the conference every year. We don't have a lot of those brand name teams from the Power Five on the schedule, but how do you guys feel about that? It's a good thing because it looks like, hey, we can win, we can be successful, we can celebrate and still put people in the stands, and we can still raise money. I mean, how do you feel about that?
Well, I think the athletic director has done a great job of leading the Pirate Club and, you know, getting some good donations and things like that so they can start this new indoor facility. I think that's going to be big, especially when you're trying to recruit a North Carolina kid and these kids are going to visit NC State and they see that big bubble over there. It feels like they're in the NFL over there. So I think that'll be a great addition with our practice facilities. Like I said, I haven't looked at the schedule, but I do know that we play Michigan next year. So hopefully I'm in a position where I can get a ticket and go to that game. That would be kind of pretty cool to go to the big house, especially the type of success Michigan is having right now. So I think that'll give the kids some motivation over the offseason that, hey, we better be ready. You know, we say we are as good as we think we are, or, you know, as an individual, you better be ready for Michigan. You know what I mean? Play against some of the top recruits. But other than that, I think Coach Houston and his staff, you know, I think they've come in and done a great job of giving the guys a vision. I like the way Coach Houston treats his players. You know, I see the players, they're playing with a great effort, and they got a vision and kind of a chip on their shoulder. So It'll be exciting. You know, we'll be losing a quarterback and some experience there. But obviously, the staff has done a great job recruiting some really good athletes in there. I was at a new restaurant the other day here in Greenville called Coco's, which is a sports bar that that was opened up. And I had a chance to run into one of my frat brothers there, the tight ends coach, and then also the running backs coach. And they were very nice guys, reached out to me and said, hey, man, if there's anything you need, if you need a ticket to the game or a sideline pass or something, we got you. You know what I'm saying? Because before, you know, I would call back and I'll just ask for tickets. And you know, Matt Maloney would always look out for me or something. But, you know, I've never had a sideline pass since I stopped coaching or playing. You know, I think maybe JJ and some other guys are in control. But anyways, going back to those coaches, they reached out and said, hey, you deserve this, or you can utilize this. Come get around our players. Come speak to the players. You know, I just, you know, and you know, you got Shank there, and then you got Donnie Kirkpatrick. You know, I think the future looks pretty good. We just got to continue to recruit well, and the fans got to continue to cheer hard like they're doing. Great environment.
E-Mac?
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, that bubble, that indoor facility is going to be big for recruiting. I mean, that transfer portal helping us out too. Yeah. We're getting a lot of kids from Power Five schools. But I think at some point we're going to have to start, if we want to get where we want to get, we're going to start playing those Power Five schools. I remember back in the day, we didn't care who we played. I mean, whether it was Michigan, Alabama, Auburn, we didn't care. We was like, all right, we're going to strap it up just like y'all do. We're going to out hit you. We're going to outrun you. And we will win some games. Like you said, we won, what, 35 games, Power Five games?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I've been able to experience through my, you know, two times I was at ECU. Wow. I'm proud of those. And I, of course, you know, I enjoyed every one of those, no doubt. They can go out there and knock off Michigan. They'll probably have more of those teams on a schedule the next year for sure. So,
well, I tell you what, I bet schools. We were back in the day. We were like App State is now. People don't want to play App State. That's what we need to get back to. Where people don't want to play us. They're afraid to put us on their schedule. And so far, looking at that team now, I think they're getting close to being back there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they got a good shot to win out this year. You know, I look at Drake May at UNC, and I look at the impact that a quarterback has now with the type of football that's being played out there. And personally with me, I like to watch teams that have a defense. You know, when you look at the score of SMU 77, Houston 63, are you kidding me? It's all about, you know, if you have a defense, you got a chance. Yeah. And I think that Blake Harrell's done a great job since he's been at East Carolina in putting a defense together and putting a week-to-week game plan together, and those guys are playing physical. I mean, they'll hit you. So that's really good to see. You know, I think if you got a defense, you got a chance. Going back to when Steve was coaching, you know, during camp one year, we got a monsoon every day. We ended up no fields we could practice on. We're over there. I don't even know what year it was. We're on some grade school field, junior high field, and it still had 4 inches of rain on it. And so, you know, the thing about it is that hurt us going into the season because of the quality of the practices. And, you know, I'll say this for Scotty Montgomery. He probably did experience that 4 or 5 times where he had to bring the team in because of lightning warnings, and then you have to try to go back out there and practice. And that's game week, and that's one of your main – if that's a Tuesday, you're in trouble. So I think he had probably 4 or 5 games like that to try to prepare for, you know, that I experienced. But I think that indoor facility has been lacking – for many, many years, and it's going to make an impact, no doubt. So I'm happy to see that. The other thing I'd like to see, and I'll just mention this, we got a few minutes left, about 8 or 9 minutes, but, you know, when I was at Carolina for, for 10 years, what I saw up there was, first of all, they take care of their own. There's no question about that. I was not one of their own, so I was lucky to be there 10 years, I guess. But I would like to see ECU take care of their own maybe a little bit better. But, you know, what I'd love to see in that new indoor facility is I'd like to see a picture of all the guys, a big picture of guys that made it to the NFL, you know, made it to the Pro Bowl, made it to the Super Bowl, whatever, because, you know, we got, there were 66 guys in the history of ECU that have been drafted. And then within that 66 guys, you got some people who are very highly accomplished in the NFL, like a Rod Coleman, for instance. And I'd love to see, you know, around that building, when recruits come in, they can see that they can be highly accomplished in the NFL, come to ECU. So I don't really know why, you know, but I asked about that when I was there, you know, through my last stint at ECU. I wanted to try and put some things up in the weight room. But I guess the answer I got, well, you know, we got to make sure that we recognize all the teams. That's fine, too. But that's kind of one of the things I'd love to see that I think would help recruiting. You know, at UNC, they actually painted murals of guys outside around the stadium on the walls. And that was very impressive in relationship to, you know, bringing recruits in there. So I'll just mention that. But the other thing I want to talk to you all about, you know, before we wrap it up is, you know, your current family, your kids, you know, what's going on? Give us an update. Emac, how about your kids? I know, you know, they've been very successful in relationship to their involvement. So, you know, let me hear a little bit about them.
Yeah, I got my son's at UNC Charlotte right now. He's going to school for engineering. So this is freshman year. I got my 13-year-old daughter. She's here with me now. So they're all doing well. Both of them got, I think my son's got all A's and one B. I think she got straight A's. Swimming, you know, they're just living life and they're doing well though.
Yeah, great. Tell me a little bit about, and I'm pretty sure this will involve your faith as well. Tell me about the accident.
That accident changed my life. I mean, I look at life totally different now. That state patrolman came up to us and he was like, I'm surprised y'all are still alive. And everybody made it out okay. You know, I didn't care about the car.
Yeah. You know, how did that happen? What were the injuries?
We were on our way to the beach. And kid, I think it was like 17-year-old kid just flew through a stop sign and T-bones. Was flipped like four times. It was, when I said it was pitch black dark, I just remember when I got out of the car to get the kids out, there was one light and there was a church right across the street from us. And that was the only light out there. And I ended up tearing whatever that muscle is, that connects your hamstring to your calf. I tore that, messed my shoulder up, my back. He had a laceration on the side of his head. It was millimeters from you know, his temple. So we ended up having to get him back to Winston-Salem to go to Brenner's to get plastic surgery done. My daughter was fine. She was asleep. So she was fine. And my wife, she was all right. But it was just basically me and him.
Yeah.
I don't know what clicked in me, but it was like as soon as we started flipping, I think my seatbelt was off before we even stopped rolling.
Yeah.
And I jumped into one that got my daughter out and went on the other side, got my son out. I just remember him bleeding and blood running in my hand, but I couldn't see where the blood was coming from.
Yeah.
Just so happened, EMT came down the road and stopped, called the ambulance. I mean, we had no clue where we were. We were like an hour and 30 minutes from the beach. I went in Whiteville, North Carolina.
Yeah.
So we were getting ready to go across the border to South Carolina. But that changed my life.
Praise God for the recovery.
Yeah. Oh, he that's the only reason why I know we survived.
Yeah. Well, you and your family mean a lot to me, so I'm happy that everybody's fine now.
Yes, sir.
Junior, I don't know much about your family. So, you know, update me.
So I remarried. I got a super wife. We've been married now going into year 9, I believe it is now.
Yeah.
So she actually was a UNC graduate. She works for IBM, works from home for IBM. So definitely said a man that finds a wife finds a good thing. And all she do, she'll prosper. So she's definitely been my blessing. So I'm definitely thankful for her. My kids, my oldest son, he's out in Arizona. He has a daughter out there. So I do have I'm a granddaddy now, I guess, Baba. So that's pretty cool.
Okay.
And then, you know, I actually had him at a young age when we were in college, you know, I was in college at ECU. So now he's out in Arizona with his daughter. My middle son, his name is Nicholas. He's out in Louisiana, actually just moved to Texas. And he's working for Amazon. He's had his own business and done some other things. He's into the day trading and things like that, like myself. And then my daughter, she finished high school with straight A's. She got a scholarship to go to Louisiana Monroe. It's kind of cool because I coached at Louisiana Monroe and she was born in that hospital there. She's from Shreveport, Louisiana, but she was born in Monroe. So for the opportunity to go to scholarship, academic scholarship to Louisiana Monroe, that's pretty cool. She's in her freshman year at Louisiana Monroe.
Carson, congratulations to you.
Yeah.
About to be a granddaddy.
Yeah. Yeah. This month, I'm going to be a granddad. Bo and Lacey are expecting. We know it's a girl. We had her in our reveal, and they're going to name her Max, which is a good Irish name. I'm one of those hardcore Irish dudes, so that's going to be very exciting, and particularly exciting for my wife. She's off the chain. I mean, she's got a crib in our house and all kinds of baby clothes and diapers and everything. So, I mean, it's unbelievable. So looking forward to that. Junior, I see you quite frequently out here golfing, maybe not as often as I did before, but I don't golf with people very much. Might sound crazy, but I like golfing by myself because I like the peace and I like to get through 9 holes or 18 holes very quickly. And I actually play better because it's quiet. Because if you get out of here and play with Eddie, you ain't never going to get through 18 holes and it's never going to be quiet. So,
exactly. Yeah, I just came back from a golf trip myself maybe 3 weeks ago. Went to Vegas.
Yeah.
Out there with some other guys, yep. A couple of my frat brothers. And we went out there for 5 days and played 4 different courses. And wow, yeah. Unbelievable courses out there. I took a Myrtle Beach golf trip. So I try to work hard, but I try to get my recreation time in with golf. Yep. So keeps me competitive. And, I play with a bunch of guys that are pretty good. So you gotta bring your A game every time.
I hear you. I see you guys out there throwing money around, so that's why I don't golf with you guys. You know, I'm very happy if I'm an 85, and that's
a good day.
I'm getting there now where I'm pretty steady in the 80s, but I didn't start golfing until late in life, but I enjoy it. But I can't hold – I'm ADD or whatever you want to call it, but 9 holes – after 9 holes, man, I might just blow up, you know, because I just can't concentrate anymore. But I really do enjoy it. And I do want to let you know that I got a gym in my garage.
Oh, nice.
So anytime you're out here and you want to get a little workout, and I'm happy to take you through something, you know. And I got pictures on the wall, all you guys. it comes to the thought. Now, I need a little bigger picture of you, Junior. That one I got to use too small. So.
Oh, okay. That's if I can get something for you.
Yeah, I need something to... But I want to thank you guys for coming on the podcast today. Can't tell you how much respect I have for you and how much I enjoyed coaching you. Those are the times that I remember because, you know, when you're in coaching, everybody knows this. You got some miserable times, you got some great times, and you know, when you win, those are great times. And when you lose, those are the challenging times. And you know, it's a crazy profession, no matter how you look at it. So I really enjoyed my time with you. So I'm going to go ahead and sign off on this one now, and hopefully I'll see both of you guys sometime in the near future. And so this is Jeff Connors signing off for Absolute Empowerment. And I want to leave you with, sin is short-term gain and long-term loss, and righteousness is short-term sacrifice and long-term gain. So Jeff Connors signing off. God bless, and see us next week. See you next week. Thanks a lot.
Coach.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Absolute Empowerment with Coach Jeff Connors on The Sports Objective. Join us every Monday night for a new edition of the show. Listen to the show pretty much everywhere podcasts are found. Be sure to follow us on social media at TheSportsOBJ on Twitter and TikTok, at TheSportsObjective on Instagram. Like and follow our Facebook page and subscribe to our YouTube channel. As always, we appreciate you listening to the show, and go Pirates!